All right, let's make sure you are in fellowship and continue on here. Plowing through here concerning separation under Roman numeral 8, we're dealing with those outside the local church, well, and even sometimes those within, as we saw under the espousing heretical doctrine. False doctrines are causing divisions and all of that, the divide and conquer tactic that's so popular, simply because it works. Three here now, we're dealing with reversionistic believers, 1 Corinthians 5, 7. And this is a tough line to draw, but we have to acknowledge that it's here. Generally speaking, we want to grace believers out and give them opportunities to get their act together as much as possible. But then it becomes a point where, in fact, you've got to deal with certain things. And in this case, context here deals with the incestuous Corinthian, that this was an intolerable situation that Paul, the church, did not deal with. And so Paul had to deal with. Apparently, this guy had taken up a sexual liaison with his stepmother. It doesn't appear that it was, we might say, blood incest, as if that's any better. But the idea here is that they hadn't dealt with this. The Corinthians were espousing their, quote, grace orientation. You can do anything at our church and get away with it. Well, no. There comes a point at which it becomes intolerable. And it's one thing to be grace-oriented. It's quite another to put up with nonsense you don't have to and should not put up with, in fact. And the sad reality is that when certain things are tolerated and not dealt with publicly from the pulpit, that people become inured in their way of thinking and they become set in it, and it can spread. When immorality is tolerated and not dealt with, that we're against this, we don't like it. We'll grace people out to the extent that we can. It just simply spreads. Then other people believe, well, they can get away with it. And you don't want people thinking that. Well, number one, it's not good for them to even think that. But unfortunately, as a pastor, you're going to have to draw lines in the sand, unfortunately, and deal with things and publicly deal with things and say it for what it is. So people know where you stand. That this is not appropriate. This is not tolerable. 1 Corinthians 5, 7, clean out the old leaven. This is an imperative here, but what's an imperative for? It's an imperative for getting rid of the evil, purging the evil from the midst of the local church. So that you may be a new lump, just as, in fact, you are unleavened. So he uses an analogy here, the Passover, to make the point about getting rid of evil in the local church and not tolerating it. So you have to, again, you have to make some hard decisions sometimes. And some people's heads are going to end up on the chopping block. That's just the way it is. We don't want them to put them there. We would encourage them not to. But if they do, the axe will fall at some given point. Also, verse 13. But those that are outside, God judges. Now, again, we basically say the cosmos, God has to take care of them. It's not our job to judge even other local churches, other pastors, other congregations. It's not our business, not our purview. And certainly those that aren't believers, those that are on the outside, that's up to God. God has to deal with them. Let them do what they want at a certain level. Those that are outside, God judges, imperative, remove the wicked man from among yourselves. And so, obviously, again, we try to give people time, space to grow up, to take the doctrine and all that. And then at a certain point, if it just becomes evident that they're not going to, they are set in their STA activity. They're going to continue to do this. Well, then, ultimately, you're going to have to deal with it. 2 Thessalonians also 3:14. This one's in the context. That one was immorality. This one's in the context of something much simpler, and that is just the believer that won't work for a living. That separation becomes the order of the day for them. If anyone does not obey our instruction in this letter, take special note of that person and do not associate with him so that he will be put to shame. See, normal people, if you separate from them, they should feel bad about it. If they don't feel bad about it, it tells you, number one, you're not dealing with a normal positive believer. If somebody called me up and said, hey, look, I'm having to separate from you. You're out, you know, you're out of it. It would give me pause to think. And I wouldn't just assume, well, they're an idiot. They may be, but that I wouldn't assume that necessarily. I would have to consider, is there anything to this? But people, obviously, if they're negative, they feel justified. And then you separate from them, and they just act like, well, it's no big deal. Oh, it is a big deal. It is a big deal before God. If a positive believer has to separate from somebody. And again, this has been abused in the past, I recognize that, but we don't have to abuse it in the future. You can't use the doctrine of separation, quote, as a club, but it is a reality that you have to deal with. So that he will be put to shame is the idea. It's the legitimate shame that comes on the person who's going negative or who has gone negative, at whatever level. Separation from defiling activities, 2 Corinthians 7:1. Pardon me. Therefore, having these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all defilement of the flesh and spirit. Again, because it's a third person imperative, they supply the let us, but the idea is it's an imperative. Cleanse yourselves from all defilement of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. And of course, as Paul told the Corinthians essentially had shut him out, and he says, you know, make room for us. We haven't done you wrong. We haven't done wrong to you. The fact is, whatever failings Paul had, guess what? He still hadn't done the Corinthians wrong. Here we are to act as salt among the cosmos, a preservative that is tart, irritating, and soothing, and it also has certain medicinal qualities. It can be healing even. So as a believer, if you are salt, one, you're going to irritate certain people. You know what happens when you get salt? You get an open wound on your hand, you get salt in it. You know how that feels. Well, the world is one big open wound out there, trust me. So believers can be irritating to them as they deal with issues of doctrine and talk to them about things they don't want to hear about or don't want to think about. So the cosmos, you tend to irritate them because you expose them for what they are. And they see that. They know it. Well, they don't necessarily like it. Salt also adds a spice to life. I mean, have you ever eaten something and you just thought, man, this needs some salt. This needs some flavor. You can get a fine cut of tenderloin, but I'll tell you what, that piece of meat needs some salt on it. Because it doesn't have any fat, doesn't have any real flavor at a certain level. It's very tender. But it always needs salt. I've never eaten a piece that didn't. So you have this being salt out there in the world. As Jesus said, you're the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, what good is it? Unsalty salt. Well, that's something that's about worthless. Unpeppery pepper. It's no good. He said it's just fit to be thrown out and walked underfoot. That's all it's good for at that point. So you have to maintain your edge doctrinally at some level. The cosmos, again, is not going to like that. 5:11, do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead even expose them. You're the salt of the earth, and part of that salt is you know, you're going to irritate them. And salt, again, to the positive believer, is not irritating. We are to present the appropriate witness of the life, Matthew 5:16. This is one, again, I didn't typically include many in the Gospels, but where there were ones that were very clear that were not just directed towards the age of Israel, but are appropriate at any point, I did try to include. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works. There's a way to go about living your life so that people see it and they recognize it and appreciate it. Now, they may not know why they like you or why any of that. They may not even ever have it. You know, I have very few conversations with the people of any depth. I don't remember any one I've ever had of any depth with the places where I bank. But they know me, and they're nice to me, and they seem to like me. Go figure. No accounting for taste. Well, guess what? When I go in there, I'm pleasant, I'm polite, how you doing, and all that. So, again, while people may not see it, they may not even know it. But still, the point is we do, and God does. So they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. And guess what? On the other hand, let me point out to you, you could be the greatest witness of the life that's ever lived. And nobody may notice, and they may never glorify God on account of you. But then again, they may. And so we recognize that the way they react, the way they respond, to some extent, is contingent upon their volition as well. But we know what the right thing to do is, and do it. And we've read 1 Peter 2:17. We are to show the appropriate honor for all men. 9, concerning marriage and family, A, husbands and wives. 1, husbands, Ephesians 5:25. And Paul addresses the husbands first. Actually, he addresses the wives first. Take that back. This is the second group he addresses. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church. So what you got to ask yourself is, how did he love the church? Well, clearly, the whole point of all of this is self-sacrifice. That you have to be willing at times to sacrifice yourself. You can't be just looking out for your own desires and all that. And let's face it, I'm a man. I know men. Men are selfish creatures. Women can be too, but women tend to be more giving than men in a lot of cases. Now, I've met some women, you know, trust me, I know they're not. I'm not saying, but as a generality, let's generalize. Men tend to be more self-centered, in my opinion. That's not to say that women can't be or won't be, but I know men and I know me, and I assume I'm a normal man. And guess what? Yeah, men can be selfish idiots. I'm aware. And we'll deal with that. But for now, the whole point is we shouldn't be. We should work on these things. We should work on loving our wives just as Christ loved the church and gave. That's the whole point, giving. Serving your wife. And that's the easy thing to let go sometimes. That's the easiest thing. Because we tend to take advantage, let's face it, we all know it, I think. And we tend to take advantage of those the closest to us. And when we have a bad day or whatever, who do you take it out on? If you don't have a dog. You can't kick the dog, so kick the wife, right? And we've all done it. I've done it. I'm aware of it. But I also know it's wrong, and I rebound it, and I deal with it. And I'm not proud of it, but this is one of those deals, okay, let's confess our sins. This is appropriate now. This is the appropriate forum, I think. All husbands do this type of stuff. And so you have to be challenged. And the challenge is here to give. Guess what? What happens? You get home, you're a man, you've been out working all day, you work hard, you're tired, you've done your 8, 9, 10 hours, whatever it is. You come home, and you plop down on the sofa, turn on the TV, and you don't want to be bothered. And the wife wants something. Honey, the dishwasher's broke. And you just want to wring her neck. Well, it's not her fault the dishwasher's broke. But you don't want to be bothered with it. And I pick something like that. But many things like that happen. And so you have to say, okay, well, you know, maybe I should help her a little around the house. Okay, there's nothing wrong with that. And as little as possible, though, I would stress that. Kidding. But the point is, and if I do help, I make a big show of it. Man, this garbage is heavy. Oh, it's all too true, isn't it, guys? We know it. And so maybe some men are better men than I am. If you are, you're a good man, Gunga Din. But the point is, again, you have to give. You have to sacrifice. Say, well, I sacrificed all day. I worked for a living. I pay the bills. I do all that. Well, unfortunately, there's more to it than that sometimes. And you have to figure out what her weaknesses are, what her needs are. I don't want to think about that. But these are the doctrinal realities, unfortunately. Or fortunately, as the case may be. And so you have to look at these things, think about them. Okay, well, you know, and as a man, you're probably thinking, I'd rather watch football. Or, you know, something. I'd rather go fishing. I hear these guys, we got them, they come up there all the time. I hear that because we rent out, of course, industrial space out there at the park. And I don't know how many times I've heard guys, I just want a place to go when I need to get away from the house. Well, that's not, what kind of a marriage is that? I mean, I'm not saying there's never a time to be apart. But obviously taking separate vacations, I personally don't see that as being healthy. I think that sets you up for some trouble down the road. I'm not saying there's never a time for it. I've actually gone, I think, on one or two things in the 30 plus years I've been married without my wife. And in most cases, I don't want to go without her. There's been a couple of times where, yeah, I did. But it wasn't like I was thinking, oh, I got to go to get away from her. That wasn't the whole deal. It was just a guy's thing, and they only wanted guys going, okay. But, I don't see that as being healthy, separate vacations and all. I mean, I'm not saying there's never a time for it. I'm not saying it never happens. I'm just saying if that's the rule of your life, that to me seems there's some problems somewhere that aren't being dealt with. So I don't go rent myself a special place to go to so I can get out of the house. I mean, what kind of home life is that? Where the husband and the wife don't even socialize. They spend all their time apart. What kind of a marriage is that? That's not good. 5:33 also, nevertheless, each individual among you is to love his own wife even as himself. And he gets into, taking care of your own body. What do? You pamper it, right? You shave it, you cut your hair, you put on smelly stuff, and you brush your teeth, you floss, hopefully, and you take care of yourself very meticulously, Well, that's the whole idea. If you do take care of yourself meticulously, well, this is normal human behavior. Now translate that behavior into concern for your wife and take care of her. You say, well, I sometimes get enough of it. Well, I understand. Everybody does. But that doesn't let you off the hook with these verses, as near as I can tell. So, love his own wife even as himself, and the wife must see to it that she respects her husband. And we'll get on to the women here in a minute, but let's just stay with the men for now. I have many things to say, if these lips could talk. Colossians 3:19, also for the men. So the challenge is, and I know, and some of it in men, it's just laziness. We just don't want to push ourselves to do it. We'll go out there and we'll push ourselves, and I've seen this in people. I've seen it myself. You go out there and you'll work your butt off for the cosmos and please them all day long and come home and say, I don't want my wife to bother me. Well, why? Because you've given, given, given all day. And so you don't feel like giving when you get home. Well, that's where your real applications are. As Jesus would say, you should have done the other things, but not let this go undone. You tithe mint and dill and cumin. Oh, okay. But you've neglected justice and mercy and the weightier matters. And if you stop and think about it, when you get to the Bema Seat, obviously we're going to be judged for how we did our job. That's a part of the judgment, I'm sure. But is that going to be as important as how we lived our lives at home and how we ran our families? Which is the most important here in terms of before God? So that's just something to think about. 3:19, husbands, love your wives and do not be embittered against them. That's one of the things. See, you can't discipline wives like you can children. Be nice if you could. All right, you're getting a spanking, that's it. But that often leads to, sex. So... No, I'm kidding, of course. But the point is, you can't discipline like that. So what do men do? They get frustrated because you can't turn them across your knee like you could your kids. You can't ground them. What are you going to do, ground me? I'm an adult. You can't ground them. Plus, if they got a job, I don't want to ground them. I want you to go to work. That would be like a vacation. Kid acts up at school, they expel him. What's the punishment? You can't come to school. Bummer. So you can't ground them. You can't spank them. What are you going to do to them? Well, you got to figure out ways to deal with them that are appropriate doctrinally, that are age appropriate. Obviously, they're grown women. And even if they don't act like it sometimes, they're grown women. And there's a certain honor and respect that you have to show. That we'll get into that. That's the First Peter thing. but men, and then if men don't deal with them, they just get bitter. And it eats them away. It eats away at them. And it tears them up internally because they're not dealing with it. So you have to figure out how to deal with it doctrinally, appropriately, and all of that. You have to control your wife at some points because she won't control herself. Okay? That's a part of the job. That goes with the territory. Now, in an ideal world, your wife would be perfect and she'd always do the right thing and you'd never have to deal with it. Yeah. Like that's going to happen. Doesn't happen that way. That's not like, I'm not perfect. I don't do it right all the time. I can't even handle myself. I mean, I can, but sometimes I don't. I mean, that's the facts. So you have to figure out how to deal with them. And if you don't, then this bitterness sets in. And once bitterness sets in, you're done. You won't work things out. You don't even want to work things out. You just get bitter, and then you get more distant, and then we know what happens from there. I've listened to some men talk, and I mean, they were so bitter against their wives. I'm not talking about people on doctrine. I'm not talking about the cosmos out there. I'm talking about people that should have known better. And they were just eaten up with all their wives. And again, husbands, if you're going to focus on all their failures and never think about what they do right, does she fail? Sure. She's going to fail. Can she fail big time? Sure. But even if it's frustrating you and drives you nuts and you're pulling your hair out, you still got to figure out a way to handle it in fellowship. And I'm not talking to someone who hasn't dealt with this. I've had my share. And even if you've got a good wife, you're still going to have to deal with certain things. And so, again, if you don't, you end up getting bitter. And this will end up in divorce court. So, that's the way it goes. So you have to figure out how to do it. And again, this gets into the mental attitude, obviously. Don't be embittered. What happens once the root of bitterness springs up? We know. We've seen it. Many get defiled. And then they get bitter against each other. What? One of them goes out and has an affair or whatever. They divorce. Then other people are dragged into all this big mess. And then how many people are dragged down by this? Because two believers wouldn't corral their STAs. A lot of people. And you have to recognize that other people in the local church are affected by what you do, whether you like it or not. There's a certain responsibility we all have. And we want people to all make it. That would be the goal. That's I've never had any other goal towards anybody that came here. Now, sure, I want them to make it, but I can't live their life for them. So again, the no bitterness factor. A, spiritual and disciplinary responsibility over the children. That resides primarily, of course, we know, with the dad first. Ephesians 6:4. I've heard men on doctrine make stupid statements like, I've never spanked my kids and I won't allow it. You're an idiot. I mean, you are a complete, I don't want to use the words for what you are here, but you're an idiot. Let's just leave it at that, I guess. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. The idea is you can have legitimate desires for them. You can have legitimate things you want them to do, but they have to be, one, age appropriate. You can't tell the 4-year-old, go out and wash the car. And then when they come back with the Brillo pad, you wonder what happened. What went wrong? Well, that was not an age appropriate task. So you have to think about these kinds of things. You can have expectations for your kids, but if you have unreal expectations, and I've watched parents do this. I've watched parents on doctrine do this. They live their lives through their kids. That is sick. They live their lives through their kids. They're pushing them into this and that and everything because they think it's important. That is sick. You will raise a disturbed child under that circumstance. And then I've watched parents do that won't discipline their kids on top of it. So you're really going to have a problem, child, down the road. Give them everything they want. One sure recipe for disaster. Give the kid everything they want. Under the guise of, well, I never had it, and so I want better for my kid than what I had. Well, that's stupid. So the reality is, and again, even if you're a good, great parent, let's say you did everything right. There's no guarantees because we also have to factor in volition. Your kid could still grow up to be an idiot, even if you did all the right things. So, but you still are responsible. You're obligated to do the right things as a parent. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline. And I like the fact that discipline comes before instruction. You're actually not going to get instruction without discipline. You have to have the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That your responsibility as a parent to set the tone, Bible classes first, Bible doctrines first in our lives, and it's always going to be that way, and make it stick. I've seen parents that gave lip service to this principle and then turn around when the kid wanted to join a soccer team. Okay, well, now you can join and miss Bible class. That's nonsense. And it's certainly nonsense if it comes from the pulpit for the pastor to get up there and say one thing and then let his family go do what they want to. That, of everything I've ever been guilty of, that wasn't one of them. That wasn't part of my failures. So again, you don't want to provoke them. The idea is you've got to, you know, what's appropriate, what's, you know, age appropriate and all that. You want to have high expectations for them, but you also are going to have to recognize, hey, they're going to fail, they're going to come up short, they're going to let you down. It happens. It's the way life goes. Get used to it. B, the spiritual responsibility for the wife, 1 Corinthians 14:35. And of course, obviously as a husband, that's going to be your big area responsibility. The wife and the kids. And then, you know, you get them raised, okay, you're off the hook then. 1 Corinthians 14:35. If they desire to learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home. So you have a spiritual obligation to teach them. And, you know, I read Linda was asking me something yesterday, and I thought, I taught this. She goes, well, I don't always get it the first time through. So I'm thinking, well, maybe I need to repeat myself more often, because people like that in me. Could you repeat yourself more often, you ask? Oh, sure. But, you know, I thought, well, I taught that. You know, but it was some historical principle. It wasn't like it was a principle of doctrine. It was a question about history. You know, so, okay, well, I said I covered that in Daniel. Well, you know, and I realize, you know, I go through this stuff literally four or five times before you ever hear it. So, I go through it over and over again, and then I get it back in class. You only get it once, I guess. So, maybe a point for more repetition than I've had in the past. I don't know. But she should be allowed to ask at home, and if you don't know the answer, then it's your obligation as a husband to find the answer. Don't be arrogant and say, oh, I don't know the answer, but I'm not going to ask. That's dumb. You just remain ignorant then. You don't want to do that. You know, go ask a deacon, go ask a pastor, do what you have to do. Find out. Research it. So if you don't know, be humble and honest enough to say, I don't know. I don't know. That's a part of intellectual honesty. So you've got the spiritual responsibility, not only the physical responsibility for her, but the spiritual responsibility. And in a sense, obviously, your wife shares in everything in your life. The blessing, the cursing, the discipline, all of that, the rewards. It is a partnership. It is to be a mutually beneficial relationship. And it can't just go one way, unfortunately. That's not the way God intended it. Okay, wives, Colossians 3:18. Wives, be subject to your husbands, as is fitting in the Lord. And of course, you know, we're going to have the Ephesians passage that says, obey just as you obey the Lord. You say, well, I don't obey the Lord, so I don't have to obey my husband. No, you're not off the hook, Daryl. Subject to your husbands. What does your husband want out of you women? Obedience. That's it. It's not hard. It's not difficult. And when he says to do something, it's not up for debate. It's not an option. It is what you are supposed to. It is the will of God for your life. I mean, if he's not asking you to sin, something stupid, obviously. I want you to go out and sell drugs. Become a prostitute. No, okay, you can't ask that. You can make more money. No, you can't do that. But, okay, here's what I want. I want chicken for supper. Well, I have steak out. Did he ask you what you had out? You go get the chicken out. This isn't difficult. But then you got the female STA, and you know how that can be. You know? It's like, and men do it too. I mean, this is not just unique to females. I mean, but it's, you know, somebody tells you something and you've already done something else. And so you don't, then you bow up, oh, I don't want to do it. I don't have to do that. Yeah, you do. You do have to do that. And of course, Sarah is the great example in all this. That's why we call it Sarah's daughters. That's the passage right out of Peter, of course. Be subject to your husbands. What is the stress? What is the emphasis of Scripture? Obedience. This is how you express your love for your husband. You're obedient to him. How does he express his love for you? He has to express that through service, through taking care of you, and all of that. And again, I don't have too much respect for men that won't, you know, they throw off all their responsibilities on their wife. They won't run a budget. They won't be self-disciplined. They won't pay the bills, and their wife does it all. Well, that's wrong in my opinion. You're just shirking your responsibilities. And when that family is judged, God's not going to ask the wife. The buck stops with the husband. And so I've seen men that have done this. And in many cases, their houses are in disarray. You know, why? Well, they don't have any idea what they're spending on groceries. They don't have any budget. They don't really know what's going on. And they come to find out, oh, well, this is all going on. Well, you didn't stay on top of it. You deserve what you get. So you have those obligations. Also, 1 Peter 3, 1 and 3. But obedience, that isn't very hard. That isn't complicated either. Same thing like, you know, we got the same principle on the master-slave relationship on the job. It isn't hard. It's only hard because of the STA, because of the sin nature, because of the arrogance of people. That's the only thing that makes it hard. Again, your boss is not probably going to tell you on the job, go out and sell drugs or do this or that or do something immoral. Obviously, and again, wives and even employees are off the hook if that's the case. You don't have to do that. There's no scripture that says you have to do that. 1 Peter 1:3, in the same way. And by the way, 1 Peter, if you read the book, very much it's about submission. He deals with submission first to the government, back in chapter 2. Then he deals with submission to slaves and masters, slaves to masters. Then he deals with submission, husbands to wives. In the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands. In what way? The same way servants are to be submissive, the same way you're to be submissive to the government, in that way. And so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they're negative at whatever level. Whether they're a negative unbeliever or a negative believer, they're saved, but they're not interested in doctrine, that they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives. The may be won is potential. Obviously, it depends on their volition. You could be a perfect wife, just like you could be a perfect parent or a perfect employee and set a perfect example, and guess what? Nobody may notice. The may be won is their deal. And so as a woman, if you had a husband's negative, you don't badger him. Hey, you really need to go to Bible class. You need to get your act together. God's down on you, blah, blah, blah. We're getting jammed because you're an idiot. That's not the approach to take. That will not win a man over by any stretch of the imagination. You know, you don't want your wife acting like your mother. Stand up straight. Brush your teeth. You know, whatever. That doesn't do it. Ordering your husband around. You got to watch it. That's when you find yourself issuing commands to your husband, that's inappropriate. There's no place for that. You're not to issue commands. You're not in charge. There is a chain of command. And even in a wife, you know, in women, you got to deal with it in a certain way. And there's a wise way to deal with it. The wise woman builds up her own hand, but the foolish woman tears it down, builds up her house. And the foolish woman tears it down with her own hands. And if you have, you know, a big mouth, won't keep it shut, won't, you know. And I hate to say this because I know how people can distort it and misrepresent it and all of that. But like children, you have to teach them their place. Women should know their place. Men should know their place too. Everybody should know their place. And I'm not saying women are inferior. I've been accused of that. God, I had this. I was teaching about Abraham and Sarah, and Abraham listened to Sarah, and God jammed the living daylights out of him. Operation Hagar. So I was teaching, there's a time and a place just to tell your wife, butt out and shut up. Now, that's not going to be popular, but there's a time and a place to not listen to her, to turn her off. And then Sarah, and Sarah's a great example of this because she does both. She badgers Abraham into this deal with Hagar, which is bad news, and we end up with the Ishmaelites out of this. And then then the next time you see her and she's telling Abraham, you know, I want you to throw this woman out, she's absolutely right, 100% down the line with the will of God. So she gives him some really stupid advice, and she gives him some really good advice. And you're going to get everything in between. So as a husband, unfortunately, you're the final law. People like hearing that. The buck stops there. With all this responsibility, though, comes a lot of authority. And a lot of responsibility goes with that authority. You have both. So you have to know when to listen and when not to listen. That is a bad idea, honey. And of course, she's going to love that and say, well, thank you. Or she'll pout and sulk. You know, don't you like it when you make them mad and they sulk? That happens. You know. So, obviously, you have to, but as a husband, you also want to deal with it. Try to be sensitive about it. You know. I've done it. I know I'm guilty. Guilty. You roll your eyes. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. Well, that's probably not the best way to handle it. It may be the stupidest thing you've ever heard. But that's probably not the best way to handle it as a husband. So you win your the wives, though, they're going to win their husbands by obedience. That's how they're going to win. Silent obedience. I like to call it, you know what I've noticed in people? I like to call it sudden instantaneous obedience. And that is, when they want to do it, it's not a problem. See, it's not hard to obey when you want to do it in the first place. The problem comes when you don't want to do it. And that's when, you know, the STA, you bow up or puff up like a toad, you know. So your adornment must not be merely external here. This is verse 3. And there is a place for external adornment. Peter is not denigrating that. He's saying, you know, okay, make the most of the package you have within the bounds of propriety. Obviously, thongs, we would say, are beyond the bounds of propriety. That's not appropriate dress, really, for anybody. And women, especially young women, ought to think about that. And older women ought to think about, okay, what am I supposed to do here? God's given me this package. How am I supposed to handle it? Well, your adornment must not be, and I like the way they've supplied, merely external. There is an appropriate place for external adornment. Again, this is where the cosmos, you get an orderly arranged package. You don't have to buy all your clothes at Macy's or Bloomingdale's, or wherever the big expensive places are. Now, there's a place for buying nice things sometime, but if you spend all your money on your wardrobe, well, that's dumb. But you should have a nice wardrobe. You should dress appropriately. And you should spend some time thinking about this. It's not merely external, and he gets into elaborate hairdos, braiding the hair. You want a hairdo that's, you know, relatively simple to take care of, appropriate, you know. All of that. Wearing gold and jewelry, there's a place for all that, but not just that. And you know, I've seen women, you know, they're, you know, got bling running out their ears. Well, that's not appropriate. It can be gaudy, ostentatious. That's not what you're looking for. Or putting on dresses. Well, there's a place for putting on dresses, obviously. But he's saying the clothing is not really the big thing in the woman that you really want to look for. The woman's got to concentrate on the internal, not just the external. There is a place for concentrating on the external. To ignore the external is to fail as well. But let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves. How did they adorn themselves? By being submissive. See, that's a dirty word in our society. Women are supposed to be submissive. I think I'll say it, you know, like you can't say bomb on an airplane. You can't say submissive to a woman. Yeah, you can. You should. And obviously our culture is against all this and denigrates it and undermines it. And so we call them horsey women. They're not submissive. They're just obnoxious. And I'm not saying women shouldn't have personality. Obviously you got your personality and all that. But women have to recognize, okay, am I inappropriate here? Am I running my mouth too much? Things you have to think about as a woman. By being submissive to their own husbands. And that's another good thing. At least you can thank God, I don't have to be submissive to 90 different men. I only have to be submissive to one. My own husband. In the establishment system. Obviously, we have a royal chain of command where you have to be submissive to deacons and the pastor and all that. But it's not like they're at home ordering you around all the time, unless you're the pastor. In that case, he is. So, again, just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And she did this out of her soul. See, that's the important thing. This wasn't feigned. You know, I've been around, I've heard this doctrine taught, and then for weeks I'd hear women, you know, going around, yes, Lord. Yeah, okay. It's not so much that she called him Lord, it's the fact that it came from the soul, and she meant it. And if you know, Sarah's original name was Sarai. And Sarai means contentious. She was argumentative. And Sarah, obviously, the name change is significant. She changed. She made the maturity adjustment in some ways, and a lot of things changed for her. And this was in the deal when the Lord showed up. They were headed to Sodom and Gomorrah, if you remember the story. And Abraham says, "Well, let me fix you some food." And he runs around and he just starts dishing out orders. Hey, ordered the slave to go get the thing killed, get some food on the table. Tell Sarah, you go do this. Fire up the oven. It's the heat of the day. It's brutally hot. Fire up the oven and bake some bread. What? You know what the woman would be saying. Can't we just buy some bread at the store? Of course, there was no store. But the point is, you know, she did all this and was obedient and all of that. And even though this was not necessarily her best moment spiritually, because the Lord makes his promise, I'm going to come back this time next year and you're going to have a child. And Sarah laughs because she laughs out of unbelief. But when she's laughing, and obviously she failed there spiritually, but when she's laughing, she said, "Shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?" And she's referring to Abraham. And that's the whole point. This came out of her soul. It was not coerced. It was not fake. It wasn't phony. It wasn't put on. This is the way she felt. She recognized this was her Lord. Lord means boss, master, ruler, etc. That's what the word means. Baal in the Hebrew and Kurios in the Greek. Both have commands now, point three here. 1 Corinthians 7, 3 through 5, in respect to the sexual obligation of marriage. The husband must fulfill, these are imperatives, it's a royal command, fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body. But the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again. Why? Because if you're not sexually faithful to one another, you're going to set yourself up for a potential fall. And somebody will be provided, some temptation out there. And I've always taught this, even though many of the women and past and just blown this off like I didn't teach it, that you have an obligation to keep your husband sexually happy. And if you don't, you're failing. You're out of fellowship. You better deal with it. I can't have sex for 3 weeks. Well, wait a minute. The only reason for not having sex on a regular basis, and again, regular depends upon your age and a myriad of factors. But a sexless marriage is not a happy marriage. And it won't be. It's not designed to be. Obviously, things change as you get older, and I recognize that, you know. When you're 20 years old, you can't keep your hands off each other. And I recognize all that. I factor that in. But I've seen 30-year-old people who aren't sexually active. That's odd. That's weird. That's strange. There's something wrong. There's something wrong in the marriage, most likely. And again, sex isn't merely just a physical act. Obviously, it's the most intimate act of sharing that you do. And so if you don't come together again, Satan will tempt you because of your lack of self-control. And if a woman doesn't want to please her husband sexually, there'll be some woman out there who does. And trust me, he'll find her. And so you have these marriages I've seen happen. And that's why I say you stay out of marital issues, because you're never going to get the whole story. As much as you can, just stay out of it and leave it alone. Because, you know, I've seen these people, guy goes out and commits adultery, everybody's horrified and shocked, why'd he do that? You find out he hadn't had sex for a year and a half. I'm surprised it took him that long. And so who failed there, the woman or the husband? Well, the woman set him up for the fall, that's for sure. So then there are sexual obligations inside the marriage, obviously, for both the husband and the wife. They both have imperatives. And the woman that doesn't fulfill this, the man that doesn't fulfill this, there'll be somebody out there who'd be willing to accommodate your mate. And that's one good way to lose them. So four, under the marriage vows, 1 Corinthians 7, we have commands here. To the married, I give instructions. Not I, but the Lord, that the wife should not leave her husband. And he does allow for separation, but he doesn't allow for divorce. That's not Paul's doctrine. If you met Paul, you're going to find out he's very strong on this one. He does not allow for the divorce. If she does leave, she must remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. That's it. She can't. She got no outs on this one. You got to either get back with the right man where you're supposed to be, or you remain unmarried perpetually. And that means you got to support yourself for the rest of your life on your own. Is that really what you would want in life? Not personally, for me, I wouldn't if I was a woman. And that the husband should not divorce his wife. These are imperatives. These are not suggestions in verse 10 there. Also, what other verse we got here? 39. And basically he says, look, marriage isn't something to pursue. Whatever the niche God's assigned you, walk in it. Stay in it. 39, a wife is bound as long as her husband lives. But if her husband is dead, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. But in my opinion, she's happier if she remains as she is. And I think I have the Spirit of God. So for those who argue with Paul, take exception to it. He says, I'm pretty faithful. I'm pretty sound doctrinal teacher. I've been around a while. I've got some ideas. Now, you may not like or agree with my ideas, but I've got some ideas. And before you just blow me off and say I'm stupid, I think I have the Spirit of God too. So, you figure certain things out. And Paul says, I'm saying these things, verse 35, for your benefit, not to put a restraint on you, but to promote what is appropriate. And the fact is, obviously, as he points out in here, when you're married, you have obligations and responsibilities that take away from your ability and time to apply doctrine. Doesn't mean you can't apply doctrine in the marriage. You're applying doctrine there, but obviously it means that certain things can't go undone. And I've seen women do this. Horsey women. Oh, my husband's always off applying, helping out at the church. Well, that's God-awful. What kind of man is he? I've heard women complain about that. You know, it's like, well, when am I getting mine? Oh, you selfish little... But I've heard this. So I know it happens. You would want to encourage your husband to apply, I would think. And he should encourage his wife to apply. Yes. Now, what happens? People get jealous. They're envious. So-and-so's got more of my husband's attention than I do. I've seen women do that, too. They were jealous of me because somebody wanted to hang out with the pastor. How dare him? First, he's an idiot for wanting to hang out with me. All right, we got that settled. But then, I've seen women who were absolutely jealous of this. Jealous of a relationship there because they'd had their husband's unsecured devotion all these years, and so I was just viewed as a threat. Or any man sometimes. Other men are viewed as a threat. Other men are not a threat to your marriage if you have a normal marriage, ladies. And guess what? It's good for him sometimes to get out and do things. And even if you're not included, God forbid, there is a time and a place for some appropriate space. I don't know about you, but there are times I just want to be alone. I don't want anybody bothering me. You know, Linda's told me the same thing's true of her. She doesn't always want anybody bothering her. Just give me a few hours to myself. Well, it's healthy to have some time alone to yourself. As a normal part of life. But you got to balance all this stuff. And Paul says, look, I think I've got it together here. Remain where you are. And if you're single, you obviously have more opportunity and time to apply doctrine. That's not divide your time. What he's saying is your loyalties are not divided. And when you're married, they are divided at some level. Because you've got all these other obligations that you have to take care of, that you have to bring to bear. So the marriage vows, obviously, as he says here in verse 39, which is where we're going to stop, here, she's bound. This isn't an option. So, okay, well, we'll stop there and continue on here. A reminder, of course, that we do have class Wednesday, but there will be no class on Thursday, so we will break down after Wednesday night. Thank you, Father, for the privilege of studying your word. May God, the Holy Spirit, enlighten us in Christ's name. Amen.